Hello, and welcome to Dining with Death, True Crime Tuesday. Before we get started, please like the video if you like the video, subscribe to the channel if you want to see more from me, and you can always join my Patreon. We have a big goal there, and I will talk about that at the end of the video. Well, it has happened again. Another famous YouTube family embattled in controversy has proven to us that social media influencers can be very, very problematic. But I'm going to tell you what's bothering me the most at this point in time. Here at Dining with Death, we are constantly talking about how we must all get more involved. If you see something, say something. We talk about evil and nefarious behaviors that go on under cover of night or in secluded locations, where had there just been someone around, a life could have been saved. We talk about how to stop crime from happening, how to spot a predator, and how to spot bad deeds that go on in the shadows. But what if those bad deeds are happening not just behind closed doors, but right in front of the eyes of millions of viewers? What if that predator we talk so much about is a pretty blonde mother who goes to church every Sunday and fills her social media pages with beautiful children dressed in their Sunday best on their way to worship God? And what if, even when hundreds and thousands of viewers, neighbors, and even family members scream and shout and stomp their feet to the authorities, absolutely nothing is done? This will be part one of what is shaping up to be one of the largest scandals Utah has ever faced. It involves the police, it involves CPS, it involves the Mormon Church, it involves the Department of Occupational and Professional Licensing, and it is one of the most horrific and disturbing stories I have ever covered, let alone a story that comes out of my home state, my hometown. This is the story of the 8 Passengers YouTube channel, of Ruby Frankie and her husband Kevin, and of one of the most sick and twisted mental health professionals to ever exist, Jody Hildebrandt. I'm your host, Stacey Lee. Let's get into it.
Nine, I'm on the address of your emergency.
I just had a 12-year-old boy show up here at my front door asking for help. And he's said he just came from a neighbor's house, and we know there's been problems at this neighbor's house. He's emaciated, he's got tape around his legs, he's hungry, and he's thirsty.
Okay. Is your door locked?
No, I'm sitting outside with him on the front patio.
Okay, cool.
And he asked us to call the police. Her name is Jody Hildebrandt. And she lives 2 doors up the street. Out here in Cayenne, the houses are far apart. So he walked just under a block to get to our house. He rang my doorbell and asked me to call the police. His ankles are taped up, and he won't tell us why. But he has duct tape around each ankle. Yeah, there's sores around them. I think there's a good chance he's been... and he has them around his ankles. I mean, his wrists as well. Okay, this boy has been... This kid has obviously been... I think he's been... He's been detained. He's obviously covered in wounds.
Thursday, August 31st, 2023. I wake up and, as I always do, immediately check my phone for messages and news updates. I first notice a message from a contact I have here in St. George, Utah, a news contact, telling me to go directly to a certain local news site. I do this and am immediately in shock at what I see. There has been an arrest a few miles from my home in a very posh neighborhood called Kayenta, and the details of that arrest are shocking. As you heard in the 911 call, a boy has escaped at a home in that area and run to a neighbor's house asking for food, water, and the police. The boy is in such terrible condition that the 911 caller, an older man, begins to cry on the phone with dispatch. He is disturbed at what he sees. When police officers arrive and see the shocking condition the boy is in, they send him to our local hospital for immediate medical attention. Now, on the morning that this story broke, we didn't have the 911 call yet. And I had no idea that the next 10 days of my life would be some of the most stressful and challenging for many of us, myself included. I read as much about the story as I possibly could. And then I went on TikTok Live, which is something I've only done like once before. Thousands of people joined the live as I told them that I was headed out to Kayenta to get some footage of the house and the area where this all took place. Despite it being about 16 hours before I needed to be on the road to San Diego for a very nice 23rd anniversary trip my husband had planned for us, and me not being packed yet, I headed out to Kayenta. I went live on TikTok and then on Instagram and then on YouTube. You're seeing images I took on that day. Now, before we go any farther, I want to address the strange reaction that I got to this house. I was gobsmacked by people's reaction to this house. Hundreds of people agreeing that it looks like a fortress or a prison, or that it looks sketchy. Why is the roof flat? Why is it built into the hill like this, like a bunker? And I guess that's really the first time it dawned on me that not everyone has seen a desert community before. This neighborhood is incredibly posh and expensive. These are multi-million dollar homes. The community, again called Kayenta, has very strict rules. The houses cannot stand above the natural level of sand and dirt, and they have to blend in with the natural landscape. They cannot have dormers or a pitch on the roof. And the goal is to preserve the beauty and the integrity of this fantastic desert landscape. Some of these houses are massive. Some of them have indoor pools. I know of a couple that have a bowling alley, and it costs a lot of money to live there. So just because you can't see a lot from the road, it does not mean that these houses are bunkers or sketchy. They're actually very luxurious. They have waterfalls and gourmet kitchens. So I was really taken aback by the reaction to the look of these houses because I've grown up in this area, I'm used to them. Okay, that's out of the way. So as I stood outside the home of Jody Hildebrandt, taking a little footage, we'll get to that in a moment, a woman pulled up to deliver a package. And she said to me, "Oh, do you live here now?" And I said, "No." I was prepared for her to start cussing me out. And I already had my speech ready about how this is a public road and I can film from here if I want to. But that didn't happen. The woman said, "Oh, well, I've got a package and I can't get them to pick up the phone." And I said, have you seen the news today?" And the woman said, "No." And I said, "Do you know these people?" And she said, "Oh yes, very well." And I said, "You better get back in your car and look at the Utah news." And she asked why. And I said, "Everyone in that house has been taken into custody by the police. They're all arrested." This woman's mouth dropped open and the color drained from her face. And she just said, "Oh my gosh, oh my gosh," and got in her car and drove away. As the days came and went, we all kind of sat in shock as we learned the details of this horrific story. I do not stray far from my usual fare on YouTube. I watch true crime and horror stuff, some history, weird documentaries, that's about it. So I had no clue who the Frankie family was. I had no idea that they had millions of followers across several platforms, and I had no idea what they were all about. But like the rest of you, I was about to find out. 2015. This woman, a Springville, Utah wife and mother named Ruby Frankie, started a YouTube channel called 8 Passengers. She and her husband, Kevin, have 6 children, so there's obviously 8 in the family. That's 8 passengers. Within a year or so of starting YouTube, the channel had grown in popularity, and soon it was very, very big. I've watched some clips of what the channel was all about, and just those clips are painful. I'm not trying to be critical of anyone who viewed the channel, but I just don't find that type of thing interesting. And it's obvious to me, I think to most people, that the children did not enjoy being filmed a large majority of the time. Ruby Frankie is extremely strict. That's just not even the right way to put it. This woman is a beast. She's obviously a narcissist. She's a control freak, and she loves the camera in her face 24/7. She uses very harsh punishment for her children, and we could spend days talking about all of the eight passengers' content and the problems. We don't have time for that. There's too much to discuss. But just know, the channel was about their daily lives and their religious beliefs. The family is Mormon. And about Ruby's beliefs that basically children should be treated like dogs, like cattle. They don't have a right to privacy. They don't have a right to opinions. That they are to be raised trusting completely in their parents and doing exactly as they are told, not questioning anything. That's literally what being in a cult is. So I'm just going to leave it at that. Ruby Frankie is a horrible mother. I will say that. I am happy to go on record. Even without what has now happened, her parenting style just sucks. And she is an absolutely terrible mother. Controlling, overbearing, dominating, unforgiving, narcissistic, unbending, and uncompromising. Just a shitty parent and a shitty human being all the way around. As the eight passenger channel grows, so does the number of people criticizing the content. Many, many people saw what I have seen and feel the same as I do about it. And so people begin to make reports to YouTube that the content was not proper for family entertainment and that Ruby was dangerous. Now, of course, I am not privy to the discussions about the channel or how YouTube felt about it. But Ruby does have rights as a creator, and this platform has to be very careful about censorship. So I'm not blaming the platform for Ruby's behavior. I blame Ruby and Ruby only. We'll talk about her sad sack, poor excuse of a man husband, Kevin, later on. I'm a bitch about this kind of stuff, guys. So if you're here for sunshine and roses and to take a look at the softer side of Sears today, click away because that is not happening. According to Yahoo News and CNN and other outlets I checked on, the Eight Passengers channel began to falter about a year and a half ago. The videos went from daily to once a week, and then, as far as I can tell, Ruby Frankie pulled the channel down entirely. There were initially reports that YouTube pulled the channel down, and I even reported that early on, but it appears that it was Ruby that pulled the channel down. And this is the point in time where things really go off the rails in their lives. June 2022. Ruby joins forces with this woman named Jody Hildebrandt. Together, they form a new YouTube channel and social media base called Connections, and that's spelled like this, C-O-N-N-E-X-I-O-N-S. And they also form this thing called Moms of Truth. Oh. Here is that Instagram page. It was still up when I took this screenshot. I'm assuming it's still up. 335,000 people follow this page. I would love to share with you some of the beliefs on this page, but let's get through this part one, the bones of this story. And then in coming episodes, we can kind of flesh out the crazy here. Let's grow the tree today. And then we can spend, I don't know, infinity on each branch of crazy talking about all of the stuff these guys believed. It is a lot. YouTube has removed the Connections YouTube channel. It is no longer up for viewing, but there are clips floating around. If you Google them, you can find them. But I'm warning you, I saw an article this morning before I came into film that said YouTube is saying if you repost any old Ruby Frankie videos of any kind from Eight Passengers or Connections, you might get a penalty from YouTube and they could take your channel down. So I'm not taking any chances there. I can promise you, you ain't missing nothing. It's just a bunch of really gross mom content, shaming, new age bullshit mixed with some transphobia and homophobia, lies about sexual behaviors. These two, Ruby and Jody, when I say their names, sometimes I call them Roby or Juby. I have aphasia and I get like words mixed up and stuff, but they are a couple of nutters. There is no question about that. Now, I cannot tell you exactly when, but sometime in late 2022 or early 2023, rumors began to circulate that Ruby and Kevin Frankie were getting a divorce, or at least that they were separating. Kevin moved out of the house, and according to neighbors, we will get into this in a moment, when Kevin was gone, Ruby went off the deep end. The couple is still separated, but they are not legally divorced. I have not been able to find any paperwork stating that they are legally divorced, and I have been through the court websites in all of the districts that could have happened. Now, Kevin has been living out of the house for months. He has come out and stated that he also was abused, and you guys would be really disgusted as to how many people I've had put up some sort of a defense for him. I don't care if the man was somewhat brainwashed. I'm from a culture where people are brainwashed and where people have very strange beliefs. It does not mean they're not responsible for their children. Okay, I don't want to hear one word about Kevin might have been abused or brainwashed, because I come from a high demand religion where I regularly see people running multi-million dollar businesses that are abused and brainwashed. So I don't want to hear any excuses as to why Kevin Franke could not have helped his kids. He was a functioning adult with his own checking account, his own credit cards, his own job. He drove a car. He was functioning enough to help his children. Period. The end. Please stop defending him. I probably should have taken a half a Xanax or something before this, because this is a very triggering case for me. This hits a lot of old wounds for me, being an ex-Mormon. It hits a lot of passive-aggressive abuse and shaming triggers for me. And we're all responsible for our own triggers. I am not a person who's going to give you a million trigger warnings. You're on a true crime channel. This is what we talk about here. And I'm not one of those people that puts people in a padded cell and, you know, rubs their tummy when they're upset. We're all adults. We're all responsible for our own triggers. But just forgive me if I can't hide mine as well today. Because, you know, I'm usually so good at hiding the way I feel. Okay, let me take a deep breath. Sorry. I have like that anxiety coming up in my throat. You guys, you know. Okay, let's talk about where each of the children were at that point, back in 2022, early 2023. Sherry is the oldest. She is currently 20 years old, and from every source I have researched, she has lived away from the Franke family for some time. She is in college at BYU. Chad is currently 18, and he is attending Brigham Young University as well. BYU is owned by the Mormon Church, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Abby is the third child. She is 16, and she was living with Ruby Franke and attending public school. And the same for 14-year-old Julie. The two youngest children who were found on the day of the 911 call are 12-year-old Russell and 10-year-old Eve. It was actually like Eve's birthday the day after this happened. So I think she was 9 turning 10. I could be wrong, 10 turning 11. But Russell and Eve were being homeschooled. Now, after the split, when Kevin and Ruby split, and with Ruby now working very closely with Jody Hildebrandt, the house went to pot. Ruby began leaving the children alone for long periods of time. And I would like those of you defending Kevin to tell me, where was he during all of this? You know what he says? Well, Ruby told me not to contact the children. You tell me under what circumstance someone is going to tell you to get the hell out of your house and don't contact your own children. No, it ain't happening. But it did for Kevin. As far as I'm concerned, Kevin needs to be in jail too. And I would say that if he was sitting right across from me. I can't answer some of those questions for you today, but I can tell you, I know this for a fact. I have spoken with some people in Ruby's neighborhood, and I also did a grammar request. I have obtained the actual police reports involving the Franke household. We are going to get to those in a moment. But I know that Ruby started making trips to here in St. George, where I live. She lived in Springville in this house right here. It's about 4 hours north of me, 3.5 hours north of me. It's in a part of that town called Hobble Creek Estates. So by the time she drives the 3.5 hours from Springville to St. George, and then it's another 45 minutes to get out to Jody Hildebrandt's house in Kayenta, it is way the hell out there. There's no major freeway exit that lets you get there quickly. So by the time she gets there, if she were just to get there and turn around and go directly home, she's already gone for like 6.5, 7 hours. But she was leaving these kids for like days and weeks at a time. I guess she figured the 16-year-old was old enough to care for these kids. And sometimes these trips would last for weeks. As 2023 wore on, the neighbors became more and more concerned. How do I know? The police reports. The two middle school girls would go to school all day, leaving the 10-year-old and the 12-year-old home alone. There was no landline in the house, and those two kids did not have cell phones. So they had no way to call for help during the hours that they were alone. They're just locked in this house. They've been told to stay put by Ruby, and I know that for a fact, with nothing to do but like sit and watch TV. And she claims she's homeschooling them. I have a major problem with the whole homeschooling setup. The fact that there's no monitoring that goes on there on a weekly basis or a bi-weekly basis or something, as long as the kids can pass tests. I know there are some checks and balances in place. In my opinion, I do not think the homeschooling system is adequate. So as Ruby starts leaving for longer periods of time, the neighbors watch as she comes home one weekend and tapes paper in all of the windows of the house so no one could look in. And obviously the children could not look out, not get any sunshine. And can you imagine how creepy that house was at night? What those kids went through every day? Okay, I gotta stay focused because if I start thinking about those kids too much, then I'm not gonna be able to get through this. So I'm just trying to be very factual today. The police were no strangers to the Frankie home. Ruby and Kevin called the police in April of 2020 and in June of 2020 again, both times to report that they were being harassed. They were receiving hang-up calls and they were receiving threats. People viewing their YouTube channel had become very angry and truly believed that Ruby was abusing her kids. And some of these calls, some of these callers were contacting her, threatening her to stop. Both times Ruby called the police about harassment, the police simply took a report. There really wasn't much else they could do. But then in September of 2022, so a year ago, and maybe even before Kevin had moved out, most people say before he had moved out, the neighbors had had enough. There are three adults mentioned in the police report that I have obtained on this. There is a confidentiality clause on the police reports. I am not allowed to show those to an audience. I guess you'll have to trust me, and if you don't, you can request them yourself. You do have to pay for them. There are three neighbors mentioned in this police report, and they're all neighbors right around the Frankie home. These neighbors all claim that they have approached Kevin and have spoken with him about the abuse. So again, no excuses for Kevin. The police first make contact at the home at the request of the neighbors on September 18th, 2022. The neighbors are reporting that the kids have been alone in the house for days. So the police go across the street to the Frankie home. They knock on the door, but the lights go out and the house goes quiet and no one will come to the door. This monster has instructed her family and made them terrified to open the door to anyone, especially the police. She's got these kids so brainwashed and traumatized that they're terrified to even ask for help. Of course, they're not going to do anything to get their beast mother in trouble. So as the police stand around the house trying to get an answer, more neighbors start to gather around the scene. I was so bothered by this one sentence. I don't think the police officer meant anything by it consciously. It's just the way women are treated. He describes the solo female neighbor as very vocal and extremely insistent. I don't know. Would you describe a man that way? I don't think you'd describe a man that way. It's kind of code for saying hysterical. But you know what? Good for you, neighbor. Good for freaking you. Good for being very vocal and extremely insistent. I'm going to make t-shirts that say very vocal and extremely insistent, incredibly insistent. This neighbor wants some answers. She tells the police officers that she has Ring camera footage that she will turn over that shows Ruby's car leaving the driveway almost a week earlier and never returning. Other neighbors then tell the police that they have Ring camera footage they will give to the police officers. The police officer filling out the report goes on to write that everyone who came to the scene was very concerned about the children and especially the two youngest children who were left alone all day. The neighbors tell the police that those two youngest children would come to their houses in the middle of the day asking to play with their kids. I think the kids knew the kids weren't home. They wanted to be around adults. They wanted to feel safe. Oh, my hell. Ugh. So when the kids would ring the doorbells at the neighbors, the parents would be like, honey, our kids are at school. And the little Frankie kids will say, I'll wait. Ugh. They just wanted to sit in a nice home with parents that were there, probably making lunch, and feel safe instead of spending their day in this dark, papered up house. It makes me so goddamn angry. Oh, my hell. I knew this was going to be a rough one. The report then ends with the police officers stating that both the married couple and the very vocal and insistent woman were going to call DCFS and make complaints. That is the end of the report. That's it. You've got three adults out on the front lawn across from a house full of kids that have been home for 4 days by themselves, and the police just say they won't come to the door, call DCFS, and they leave. How do you feel about that? I can tell you how I feel about that. Not well. Now, CPS, DCFS, whatever it's called up there, does get involved. Look, I've said this in my lives and on my shorts. I'm not ready to condemn anyone, but I'll tell you one thing for sure. These neighbors tried. They tried. And I'm not going to have any patience for talk about why didn't they do anything, because when it comes to the neighbors, they tried. I don't know if this is going to end up being a failure on the police or DCFS or both. We don't have the information yet. So I'm not ready to burn anyone at the stake, but we damn sure ain't going to blame these neighbors. I can tell you that much. Now, these neighbors also might be Mormons. So, you know, I have my own issues with the Mormon church, and you all know I left 15 years ago and I'm happy that I'm out. But all of these comments on my social media about creepy brainwashed Mormons, I can guarantee you not all Mormons are like that. Yes, some are. Not all are. I can pretty much guarantee you that some of the people in that neighborhood were also Mormon and they were trying to get help for those kids. So let's not other people, my friends. We don't need to do any more othering. Othering is when you say those other people over there, those are the bad people, those other people over there. We don't need any more of that. And you know, on my bingo card of life, I never thought I'd be defending the powerful $127 billion empire corporation that is the Mormon Church. And I'm not. I would never do that. But I am saying that not all members are bad. And in fact, many wonderful people are in the church and these people tried. I try and keep the empire that is the Mormon Church sitting like a dragon on its mounds of gold that doesn't help people in the ways that I think it should, separate from the good people that believe in the church. I don't want to treat Mormons the same way a lot of them treat me as an ex-Mormon. I want to be better than that. Now, like I said, DCFS does get involved. I don't have the details of those visits. And even if I did a grammar request and got those police reports with minors involved, the reports would be so heavily redacted that they really wouldn't tell us much. And I verified that with the Springville office staff, which I gotta tell you, those girls were so helpful. I feel strongly that a lot of information as to what goes on during late 2022 and the time of the arrest in August of 2023 is going to come out through either the older children or through the relatives. We'll talk about them in a moment. Now, let me tell you, a lot of people are saying, where are the grandparents in all this? One set of grandparents, I don't know if they're Ruby's parents or Kevin's parents, are serving a Mormon mission in a foreign country for 2 years, 18 months to 2 years. I'm not a fan of this at all. I think grandparents should be home spending their golden years with their families and their grandkids. They should not be off, you know, in a foreign country trying to recruit more members to this $120 billion church. That's my opinion. But that's why the grandparents were not around. I don't know where in the hell the other set of grandparents were. I don't know if they're involved, if they knew about this. We're going to have to wait and see. I feel very discombobulated today and kind of disconnected from this story today for some reason. I don't know why. I hope it's not coming across as too annoying. I've got that anxiety rising right here and I'm just kind of like right there on the edge. I've been covering this story every single day for the last couple of weeks. My TikTok has had almost 12 million views since this story broke. And maybe because I'm sitting here talking about it from the beginning in my safe place, which is with you guys, I'm kind of on edge. Like I kind of feel like I can break down, but I can't. Before we go over the details of what happened on August 30th, let's talk about who Ruby Frankie and Jody Hildebrandt are. Ruby Frankie is a pediatric nurse, which is just about the most terrifying thing I've ever heard in my life. But I don't believe she had worked as a nurse for a while. They were making enough money on YouTube that Ruby didn't need to work. Kevin is a trained engineer in civil and environmental engineering, and he worked in that field until 2012. At that time, he went to work as an assistant professor at BYU, Brigham Young University. Kevin has a PhD, and he was teaching geotechnical and earthquake engineering. He was not a tenured professor. It's my understanding that the tenure program at BYU either doesn't exist or it's very different there. But Kevin was not a popular professor. I'll read you just one student review. There were many, and now I'm hearing that his Rate My Professor page has been taken down. But some of the Rate My Professor statements are still on Reddit. This one says, I truly did not have a great experience in this class. It wasn't an insanely hard class. I take schoolwork very seriously and have never had issues with a professor before now. Hard professors are one thing, but downright rude, dismissive, and arrogant is another. Save yourself the misery if you can take something else with someone else. He's a tough grader, lots of homework, pop quizzes, no help. So he sounds like a joy. Now, some people are saying Kevin Franke was fired from BYU in the spring of 2023. Others are saying he just wasn't asked back. I can't tell you which is true. I do know that assistant professors come and go at BYU, and maybe he just wasn't the right fit. They didn't ask him back, or he could have been actually terminated. We also don't know what Kevin has been doing since the spring of 2023. Who is Jody Hildebrandt? I'm going to say this as plainly as I can and without hesitation. A total and complete psychopath. And if you want my opinion, this is going to end up being as big, if not bigger, a story than the Frankies. Ruby Franke and Kevin Franke have 6 victims. It's horrible, and I cannot imagine what those kids have gone through. Jody Hildebrandt has hundreds of victims. Jody Hildebrandt is a licensed and accredited clinical mental health counselor. You heard that right. I pulled her license during the days following the arrest, and as you can clearly see here, she is licensed in the state of Utah, and her license is active with no disciplinary action during the time frame the state reports it. This woman was counseling people, and she wasn't just counseling people. She was at the end of the road of the Boy Scouts of America legal settlements through the Mormon Church straight to Jody Hildebrandt pipeline. Now, what does that mean? A few years ago, men started coming forward with claims that they had been sexually abused while members of the Boy Scouts of America, which at the time was part of the Mormon Church. My husband actually served as the Scoutmaster for years when we were Mormon. So in essence, your Boy Scout troop was affiliated with your Mormon ward. Mormons are split into wards depending on what part of town they live in. When these men began to come forward with these claims, the church initially kept everything very quiet, and the men were paid large settlements. But then some of the men were not satisfied with that, and they went public. Why were they paid settlements? Because people had made reports to church officials that there were certain men in the Boy Scouts that were abusing children, and the church covered it up. When that was too much to continue covering up, they had to pay these settlements. Now, this could be a story on its own, and I'm more than happy to cover it if you would like me to. But these particular men wanted the public to know that the church was covering up these instances of child abuse with settlements. As it stands right now, the Boy Scouts of America has filed for bankruptcy because of all the claims of abuse within the program, and the Mormon Church is part of the settlement that's being negotiated right now. It's going to be around $250 million. That's literally pennies for the church, as it has, you know, over $130 billion. When these men would come forward with allegations of abuse, not all were men, some were still teenagers, the church would negotiate a settlement with them, pay them off, and then send them to Jody Hildebrandt for counseling, especially if they lived in the Salt Lake area. So not only was Jody Hildebrandt the church's go-to for these types of things, everyone involved knew that these men had money because they had just received this huge payout. So Jody Hildebrandt is first off a horrible counselor, and second, she's all about money. Anyone that knows her says that. She starts demanding that many of these victims see her several times a week, so they're paying her like $2,000, $3,000 a month each. One of the victims has come out publicly. His name is Adam Paul Steed. Back about a decade or so ago, he and his wife were seeing Jody Hildebrandt after Adam received his settlement from the church. They had a young baby at the time, and Adam and his wife were paying Jody $2,000 a month for counseling. Adam started to have some misgivings about the whole situation. And as soon as he told Jody that he was not going to continue seeing her and paying her, she broke every HIPAA rule and violated every tenet of patient-therapist confidentiality and went to BYU. She reported that Adam still was addicted to pornography. I'm going to bite my tongue on this argument you guys are having on my page. Pornography addiction is not recognized by any psychiatric or medical board in the world. You can say it's real if you want. You are incorrect if you are talking in a factual sense. She tells BYU that Adam is dangerous, he's abusive, he's unhinged, and that resulted in Adam getting kicked out of BYU and having a 500-page rap sheet of BYU honor code violations, all because of things his own therapist had told to BYU. BYU believed the therapist because she's a Mormon therapist. Then Jody went to the police, and before Adam knew it, he had a rap sheet and was facing multiple felonies in the state of Utah. His legal bills were hundreds of thousands of dollars. His wife left him, took their newborn baby, and then she started having some sort of a romantic or sexual relationship with Adam's wife. You just heard all that right. You know, there's nothing wrong with your ears. You didn't just have a stroke. You heard all that right. Jody Hildebrandt destroyed this man's life. We can talk more about that later on, but he did fight back. In the end, Jody Hildebrandt had her license suspended in 2012 for 18 months. But after that, she got her license back. I promised Adam in a comment that I would help get his story out there. So if you are interested in this, go to www.jodyhildebrandt.com and read Adam's story. That website is owned by Adam, not by Jody. And you can read all about what happened to him there. It's horrible. How does a person like this get their license back? How does a person like this continue to have clientele? They do it with powerful supporters, and my friends, Jody had the most powerful in the world behind her. So this is, in a nutshell, who Ruby, Kevin, and Jody are. And all this brings us back to the bare bones explanation of the August 31st story. The events actually occurred on August 30th, the day before the story broke. Russell Franke, age 12, breaks out of the basement of Jody Hildebrandt's house. This house right here, he runs across the porch and across the street to this neighbor's house. He knocks on the door, and you heard in the 911 call what happens next. This child is so emaciated and dehydrated that he had days to live. This little boy was dying. He was covered in open wounds and he was bruised from head to toe. He had been bound and tied up for God knows how long. And the whole thing makes me so sick and so angry. I gotta stay on track here. Russell's taken to the hospital, and then the police go to Jody's house and make entry. There they find 10-year-old Eve. She is also bound, starving, and dehydrated. Immediately, the authorities in Springville are contacted, and the other two minor children, Abby and Julie, are taken into custody by DCFS up there. And now, with all four minor children in protective custody, the investigation begins. Kevin Franke is not allowed to see the minor children, and people are clamoring to get a statement from Sherry or Chad, the two children over 18. In the coming days, Sherry does release a statement, but we don't have a lot of information on the two older kids, and frankly, I didn't go digging there. They're dealing with enough already, and that's all I'm going to say about it for right now. The four minor children remain in protective custody. We don't know where they are, but we know they are safe and they are being looked after. On Thursday, September 7th, a shelter hearing was held regarding the children. A lot of those details are kept private, but what we do know is that, as if Ruby Franke could not get more despicable, she spoke horribly about some of her children, making claims that at least one of them is a serial molester, that he's molested the kids in her family, and that he's molested kids in the neighborhood. Where are those accusers? Until I see some proof of this, I am not buying the story. If there are victims out there, I will apologize in advance. I'm having a hard time with this one. I'm saving final judgment for when we have more information. Ruby and Jody were then both scheduled to appear for a first initial appearance. And you might have heard that a TikToker gave out the information as to how to find the court link. And then the court website crashed. And sorry. They don't let anybody broadcast it. They don't let anybody share it. It's confidential. You have to be there. So, you know, I just wanted people to see it. Ruby and Jody both appear virtually. Now, this isn't their arraignment. They had been arraigned days earlier, and the judge actually called Ruby a danger to the community, which is a really big statement for a judge. I've seen killers get bail and never be called a danger to the community. I just think this goes to show how seriously they're taking this. But then on the 8th, they appeared virtually. It was just basically a procedural type hearing. He set their next appearance for September 21st. That's days from now. This episode will be airing around that time. But I did see that Jody's attorney filed for a stay until October 5th. I don't know if that's been granted. In the days following the discovery and the arrest, like I said, my life went nuts. 12 million TikTok views since then. I've been inundated with questions, lots and lots of hate towards me, towards Mormons, towards Utah. This story is not about me, but there are two things that I have to clear up for the sake of transparency and my own credibility. The day after this happened, I reported exactly what my local paper, St. George News, reported. That when Jody Hildebrandt was arrested, she said to the police officers, I'm going to read you exactly what my paper reported. Once Hildebrandt was informed of the charges, she told police that Frankie should never be allowed around any other kids, meaning Ruby. I then spent the next 3 days fighting off haters and trolls, screaming that the police report said Jody Hildebrandt said the Frankie kids should never be allowed around other kids, not Ruby. Interesting, because the police report had not been released at that time, so they were just relying on other news sources. The same thing I did. So did Jody Hildebrandt say Ruby was a danger to other kids, or that the kids were a danger to other kids? I contacted St. George News and asked them for a clarification. It took days and days, but I did hear back. St. George News now admits what they printed was wrong, and the police report has now been released. It appears that Jody said to her arresting officer, don't let those kids, the Frankie kids, around any other kids. So they're blaming the kids as the dangers and saying that the kids are dangerous, that that's why they were tied up in the basement. These women are human garbage. They are trash. So anyway, the paper was wrong, which means I was wrong in quoting them, and the police report we're taking as correct for now. So if you saw me being rude to people on my TikTok, it's because they were rude to me. I'm not here to work for free and churn out 2 episodes a week and soon a podcast episode a week to get treated like crap. I ain't here for it. If you come for me in a rude manner, you're getting blocked. You got questions for me, I'm happy to answer them. Come at me sideways, and sideways it will be. When I'm wrong, I will admit I'm wrong. And I was wrong. The paper was wrong. I used the paper for my source, and so I was wrong. The second issue is the panic room. I reported on a live and on my shorts here on YouTube that I know a contractor who worked on Jody Hildebrandt's house, and he has seen with his own eyes the panic room. I was called a liar. I was told I'm trying to get clout. I am a 53-year-old grandmother who is also a musician that has played with some of the biggest artists of all time. And you think I'm trying to get clout by saying I know a guy? I know a guy who worked on the house? These trolls are hilarious to me. This contractor is someone everybody here in town knows. He's a really good guy, good reputation. He even drew me a diagram of the house. There is a full-size basement in Jody Hildebrandt's house, which is massive. And in that gigantic basement is a panic room. The panic room has a bank vault door on the outside of it. This is the diagram the contractor sent me. It has its own kitchen sink. It has its own toilet, and it has its own dedicated phone line. If that weren't enough, it has a dedicated fresh air intake that is separate from the air filters and the air conditioning in the rest of the house. This is how cuckoo, ka-choo Jody Hildebrandt is, that people are out to get her. And maybe people are out to get her because with all the lives that she's ruined, I mean, who knows? Now, this is coming straight from a contractor that I know and have known for years. He is a nice person with a good reputation, so don't call me a liar, because if you call me a liar, you're calling him a liar, and we're friends, and then we have a problem. Can you tell it's been a lot? Do I seem a little on edge today? I do, don't I? I can feel it. I really can. I'm sorry. If you're new here, I'm not normally this wound up. It's been a lot. Now, the real estate market here in St. George is one of the highest in the country. Rent here is like $2,000 a month for a 2-bedroom tiny little apartment. So that house that was built in Kayenta about, I think he said 2010, 2011, somewhere around $2 million to $2.5 million, that thing is now going for $3.5 to $4 million. Okay, so now both of those issues are addressed. And it is what it is. As it stands right now, Ruby and Jody have appeared for their initial hearing. They could ask for bail again. As I said, it was initially denied. They were declared dangerous to the community, at least Ruby was. And they didn't address bail or anything in their initial appearance on the 8th. I really wanted to go live on the 8th, but I have found out since my time as a paralegal, the laws have changed and you cannot rebroadcast anything that happens through the courts. So I won't be able to share any of that with you. I am going to try to go to the courthouse, which is not virtual, on the 22nd. It will be an in-person hearing. I don't know if I'll get in or not. I'm going to try to get there really early in the morning and get in. I do know a couple of people, but I would never pull strings. If I get in, I get in. I can report to you, but I can't take pictures or show you anything like that. I didn't even get in to the hearing on the 8th. I was sitting on my computer refreshing my link every 2 seconds, and then the system went down, and then like 1,000 people, the maximum, got in, and I didn't even get to see the hearing. We didn't learn that much. Like I said, it was just procedural, but Court TV got permission to share the hearings, or at least images from them. And so now they're part of the media, and that means other people can share them. So I'm going to share here the images that Court TV has already shared, because now they are part of the public domain. Neither Ruby nor Jody has really said much. They've both claimed that they've had major health crises at times in jail, and at least Jody has spent time in the hospital. I know that for a fact. I think they're just two very spoiled women that have never been to jail before, and it's horrible, and they would rather be in the hospital than jail, you know, because I'm about Jody's age and I've never been to jail. I've been arrested once. I'll tell you that story if you ever want to know, but I've never like spent time in jail. And I mean, I'm not going to lie, I'd probably try to get to the hospital too. I mean, it's horrible. In that hearing on the 8th, the judge moved both of the cases to Judge Walton so that one judge would be hearing the entire case rather than one judge hearing the case for Jody and one hearing it for Ruby. So as it stands right now, Judge Walton is going to be the judge on both of these cases. I know him. He's a great guy. Yes, I think he's Mormon, but I can tell you guys, my dad is a Mormon judge. They don't let their religion come before the law. Those comments really bother me because it's really insulting to the judge. You're basically saying that he doesn't respect the law when you say that. The judge is not going to put his religion before the law. They're very moral people. I don't like those accusations. Just like, I don't like being called a liar. People have even said like, I'm lying and I don't even live here in town. I'm like, oh my hell, like get over it. We got to be careful. These are real people and real people's lives. You know, we need to always remember that. Yes, there's a frenzy around this, but we can't be talking crap about the judges and the lawyers. And that's just, you know, until somebody does something, you got to give people the benefit of the doubt. My big question now is, where the hell is Kevin Franke? Why hasn't he been arrested? I will tell you that about 10 days ago, a reporter snapped photos as a man showed up with a heat gun and some tools and removed all of the YouTube branding from the van. When I posted about this on TikTok, people said, you know, maybe they're going to sell the van. You know, maybe they need the money, whatever. I'm of the opinion that the Frankies probably received some communication from this platform and were instructed to remove all of the branding or face legal consequences, because this platform does not want to be associated with these people. So I don't know. Kevin Franke, we don't know where he is. We don't know if he's here in St. George. We don't know if he's up north. But we damn well know that he knew those kids were being left for days on end. And we know that he does not have custody of the kids now. Now, let's talk just a moment about the extended family. We're running long, but I don't know where all of them were at the time. This is a statement posted on Instagram by Ruby's sisters. Pause to read. They claim they did try to get help for Ruby's kids, and we're going to have to believe them. We've talked about where the grandparents are. We've talked about where the two older kids over 18 are. So that's kind of what we know about the family at this point. People keep asking, do I think Ruby or Jody are going to get bail at some point? I personally don't think that's going to happen, because judges don't like to overrule other judges. It's a kind of a big deal when you do that. One judge has called her a danger to the community. So for another judge to now grant bail, he would kind of be calling that judge overcautious or, you know, too strict, but it could happen. The police body cam footage is another thing people keep asking about. There's a minor involved. I think we may see that at some point. I don't think it's going to be before the trial. Both Ruby Franke and Jody Hildebrandt are about 15 to 18 minutes from my house right now, sitting in our local prison facility that is called Purgatory. That is the actual name of the prison. It's a small prison. It's definitely not some big, you know, complex, but it's still not somewhere that you want to be as a child abuser. There are some gals out there that I know that are not going to like being around Ruby and Jody. So we are way over time for today. There is so much more to be addressed. As I finished writing this episode, I found out a couple more things about the family. I'm going to research a little bit more about these two neighbors that I have a connection with, but we're going to have to wait on that. So for now, like I said, their next appearance is scheduled for September 21st. It could be pushed back to October 5th. I would like to ask that we keep in mind the children and the people that are affected by this. They are hurting right now and they are not in a great place. And let's try to remember that as we talk about this case. There are so many lessons to learn from this story. I don't really know where to begin. Let me know in the comments the elements of this story you would most like to hear about in part two, and I will start researching. I'm very happy and relieved that these two monsters are behind bars. But at the same time, I'm also very upset by the fact that in the world of religious zealots and right-wing crazed conspiracy theorists, these two were operating in plain sight, and I know for a fact they're just the tip of the iceberg. Whew, that one was a lot, and I'm sorry I seem so frazzled today. I can feel it. I know how I'm coming off today, and I'm sorry. Like the video if you liked the video. Subscribe to the channel if you want to see more from me. And if you want, you can join my Patreon. If you can give a couple bucks a month, that helps. I don't make any money here on YouTube. In the end, on Patreon, our goal is to raise money to donate to police departments that have cold case DNA in storage. There are thousands of sexual assault kits sitting in refrigeration that have never been tested, and we want to pay to get those tested. They cost between $500 and $750 a kit. We want to get them tested so we can possibly solve the case they're associated with. And two, we get that perpetrator's DNA in the system so other police departments can possibly hit on it for other crimes. By joining Patreon, you can help keep the channel afloat, and eventually that's our goal, is to do fundraisers for that cause. I cannot tell you how much I appreciate you being here. A lot of new people here because of Serial Killers documentaries, Crime Reel, and Dead Bug. Thank you to those creators so much. And I appreciate you giving me a shot. I didn't think I'd still be here 3.5 years later. And it's a little frustrating here sometimes. I need the channel to grow if I'm going to continue doing this. So thank you for your support. If you weren't here, I wouldn't still be here. Please take care of yourselves, my friends. Be kind to each other. And I will see you next time on Dining with Death. Bye.
Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Mmm, boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty? Mmm, and sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object.
Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at SweetTango.com.